You are listening to Raven Radio, KCAW Sitka. It's 7:15. I'm Catherine Rose, broadcasting live tonight from the Cable House, and this is the Assembly Candidate Forum tonight. I have candidates Austin Cranford, Robert Haddle, Kevin Mosher, and Scott Celine in the room with me right now, and they are running for two open Assembly seats. These are both three-year terms. And so I just want to go over the ground rules with y'all before we get started. So this is a forum. It's not a debate. It's an opportunity to compare your views and opinions about the city, chance for voters to learn where you stand. Your time is your own. You can use it how you choose. If you want to address another candidate's stance on an issue, you are welcome to do so. And that will be two-minute questions, and I will have cards I'll hold up time with 1 minute, 30 seconds, and so forth to let you know. When I hold up this card that says time, if you could please wrap up your answer as quickly as you can. Listeners, this is your chance to ask the Assembly candidates your questions. Some of you have already submitted questions, but we're still looking for more. Call us at 747-5879 or email news@kcaw.org. And Robert Woolsey is here to take your call or question. He'll get that to me in the air room. So we're going to start with opening statements. I'm going to throw it to Scott Celine first. You have 2 minutes.
I thought you were going to ask me a question. This is, okay, Sitka Kwan, Gunas Chis, Skahadi Ayahut, this land is Tlingit Ani. I'm running for Assembly to get the sidewalk open on Catlian, one reason. Another reason, there's much going on with the electrical department and the city's report on the electrical department where they state that FERC concurs with the city not exploring the penstock and not cycling the Howell Bunger valve, which sounds good with Cowabunga valve, but no. And that's just my first aspect of why I'm on the Assembly. I failed getting the sidewalk open, but now I believe that we have a strong attorney that's going to be present. And I think there are so many forces trying to save clan houses and okay, I'm done. Good.
Oh, we have 1 minute.
No, I'm good.
Oh, okay. All right. And next up, Kevin Mosher, 2 minutes.
Hi, thank you. My name is Kevin Mosher. I'm running for another three-year term. I'm currently serving my second three-year term, so I've been on 6 years. I had never had political experience before I started 6 years ago. It's been quite a ride. I started out with lots of ideas of the way I thought things should be, and I've learned that sometimes we have to learn that things are not the way we think they are. And I believe that with my leadership, with the team, the Assembly, we have helped encourage, foster great changes for the positive in this town. And like I said, team, I mean, everything's done as a team. No one does anything in a vacuum. And I would say the biggest things I've learned so far are the ethos of teamwork, and listening to people. That's a hard skill to have sometimes because we want to talk, share where we are, but listening to people, the members of the public, Assembly members, ourselves, just listening helps you really digest what's going on. And I would like to continue another term for 3 years. I have my priorities that I personally have, which I'm sure there'll be another question on. But I believe I bring a level head, calm, wise leadership, and I would like to continue serving Sitka for 3 more years, and if people will have me, if Sitka will have me. And it has been my greatest honor to serve on this Assembly. Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin. The question goes to Robert next.
Good evening. I'm Robert Haddle and Scott and also Kevin. I join you in wanting to serve the community. And I'm a candidate for Sitka Assembly because I have a passion and have served Sitka in the 14 years that I've been here. And I feel that many say that Sitka is this side of paradise. And I basically agree, but others are correct in saying it's not perfect. The city of Sitka has several uphill battles, but like all battles, it's going to require all of us to work shoulder to shoulder and to be good neighbors that we are. I want to be your strong voice on the Sitka Assembly, but to do so, I need to hear from you. And that's one of the things that I've enjoyed as I've been campaigning, is the opportunity to listen to people and to hear their viewpoint. I have a lot of exciting things that have come forward from other people's idea, and I'm looking forward to serving. I've been a servant of this community for a long time, having served here on Raven Radio on the board, served on the music festival. I also served for 6 years on the emergency preparedness planning board, and then also have been involved with disaster planning and executing several drills. I would appreciate your vote, and I welcome the opportunity to hear from you. Thank you.
Thank you. Austin, to you next.
Of course. My name's Austin Cranford. I'm running for the Assembly because we need to get certain things under control. Housing is an issue. Utility rate increases are an issue. Our roads are in disrepair. The tourism industry has its own problems where there's either too much or too little. We need to find a middle ground, and hopefully we'll get the research needed to do that, and we'll hear from the community as well. But there's a lot of problems that need to be solved, and we've heard from the Assembly and from the current mayor and the city that, oh, well, we're working on it. Well, some of the candidates and some of the people that have been on Assembly have been there almost 10 years now, and we're going further and further down. I don't know how many people saw the State of Sitka Economy that was released by KCAL, I believe, yesterday or earlier today, but population is down. Working age population is severely down, and the only reason it's not further down than it already is because we've had an increase in elderly population, which is great, but we need people here to actually work the economy. That's not going to be improved until we fix the housing issue. We can't fix the housing issue if we don't fix our infrastructure issues and so on and so forth. At the same time, the city has a wide variety of outstanding debt to the municipal state bond board and other debts, and it seems like none of it's being resolved. I actually also communicated with the now city attorney last Thursday during her public meet and greet, and the city code is wildly out of date and in some cases contradicts state law. All of this needs to be fixed, and that's why I'm running for Assembly. We need to fix housing, we need to fix the code, we need to fix our infrastructure, and then we need to work on the tourism industry and other issues that are plaguing the city. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all for sharing your opening statements. This next question is going to go to Kevin first. So we got quite a few questions about cruise tourism. I think that's definitely one of the hot button issues right now and will continue to be. And if you checked out our questionnaire online, all the candidates answered questions about an MOU, their perspectives on a cap, and those answers are available if you want to go check that out right now at kcaw.org. But I want to take a step back and give you kind of a broader question to sort of to hear a little bit more about your thinking around cruise tourism. So this is, what is the right size for cruise tourism in Sitka, and how would you get us there? And this goes to Kevin Mosher first.
Okay, so we're going there right away. that's a good thing. It's on a lot of people's minds. I don't know that I have a specific number in mind. I know the Tourism Task Force recommended between 3,000 and 7,000. In fact, our current administrator has been directed by the Assembly to work on an MOU with the cruise dock owner, you know, the HPR dock. I believe that people have lots of feelings and thoughts on both sides. I do believe that tourism has greatly increase this community's ability to provide necessary services and also increased services. I do not want the community to be overwhelmed. Mr. Crawford mentioned that there was a CEDAR report, and in that report, it was noted that this is the top, this year was the top number of people that are coming. I think it was, I don't know, maybe 15, 20,000 less next year. And it may go down a little more over the years. We're not going to keep exponentially increasing. So my goal is for the administrator to help bring the Assembly back a completed draft of an MOU so the Assembly can look at it, the public can review it and think about it, and see where we're at. The city controls the loitering docks, so that's good. And then the HPR dock owners control that. So if we can work with them to, I'm seeing the timer. This is a long question. It's going to be hard to squeeze it in. But if we can work with the private owner dock to come up with a number that is comfortable, that allows us to bring in revenue and continue this good work of getting infrastructure built, schools funded to the max, all those kind of things, then that will be a good thing. Thank you.
Thank you. Robert, your response?
You know, I basically agree with Kevin a lot that this is going to be something that we don't magically have a wand that's going to fix it. After the pandemic, we saw the rapid growth of cruise ship visitors. That was after having nearly nothing during the cruise, during the pandemic. And the cruise ship visitors were declining before the pandemic. So suddenly we've had an expansion, an explosion, and as Alan Frankenstein's movie is the cruise ship boom, that we really have a lot of backfill that we need to do. There's a lot of people need to come together. We don't, or we're not collecting any data on the impact of what this rapid expansion of cruise ship has done to our community environmentally. We don't have good data really in the number of the numbers and what our capacity is. And I think that we can get there. It won't always be. The town has changed dramatically. We now close one of our main streets. I get a kick out of the fact that we have closed Lincoln Street and we put a toilet right in the front of it, right in the middle of it. And I don't think we need to sell our town to the next round of postcard buyers and the next group of people that need fur-lined jock straps. We have a lot to offer people. I think that we can ask all of us to be gracious to the people that come to visit us. They are our visitors. People have found a way to monetize Sitka, the wonderful town that we are, and there's nothing wrong with that, but it's not something that it needs to be shared and needs to be equitable. And I think with working together, we can make that be able to be functional for all.
Thank you. Austin, this will go to you next.
Of course, I agree with Robert. We do need the data. However, I think we should be able to get the data a lot sooner. Like, the fact that we still do not have data is a concern. There are programs, simulations, they're used by universities, organizations across the globe, where you can take the square footage of Sitka plus information such as the fire chief's code that allots how many people can be in a building, and you can put all of this in a program, and that program will tell you exactly how many people can be in an area before it becomes unsafe or before it becomes hazardous. These programs are actually used very often at concerts outside because there's an event called a crowd surge where people can get trampled and stuff like that. So these are very actively used programs, and this is something we could have started doing last year or the year before. I know, speaking with business owners last year, a lot of them said, hey, it was a little unwieldy there at the peak of the season where there was more people than they could physically handle within the businesses. When the business owners are saying there's too many people on certain days, there's an issue. So we need to get the business owners together. We need to get the cruise lines together, the dock owners, and the community. Everybody needs to sit in a room with the data when we get it and decide, okay, you know, where are the conflicts? I drive to and from the university every day. When there's a lot of people in town, I know because it takes about 15 to 20 minutes longer to get to work because I can't get through downtown. That's one of the main issues we need to also figure out is people walking in and out of roads. The fire department has said that the dock has requested ambulances, but we don't have enough ambulance to station one there permanently. And these are topics of interest that we need to look into with the data to get resolved. Thank you.
Thank you. Scott, this goes to you next.
Well, my fellow candidates have hit the cruise topics pretty good on that, but that's just like the surface of what's the town's freaking out over. And subsurface is, you know, it's not the cruise industry that took away the right for residents to keep a king salmon to eat on the weekend after they've fished or after they've worked 40 hours. And, you know, and then there's a treaty aspect to it, too. But you can still come to Sitka and buy a house that nobody in town can buy and put four bunk beds in each bedroom, put a freezer in the garage, get a $300,000 aluminum boat. Some people even get a subsistence card with that set up and get to have subsistence fishing. But you're not considered a harvester by Fish and Game. You're considered a cab driver, and there's no restriction in the growth of that. And, you know, that's really, you know, they're just, it's all connected. There's just more to it than the cruise stuff. And what how I see it is we can use home rule and change our codes, get that outhouse off the street, and then build what we need with urinals, whatever we need for handicap, and bypass this. Thank you.
You still have a minute.
I'm sorry, Scott.
You still have a minute.
No, but if we use home rule, we can change all this. Get rid of the minimum lot size. We can get rid of setbacks. And, you know, there's a lot going on down south with the people in communities taking over control of their codes. So it just doesn't facilitate, you know, the banking structure of a town. Like Sitka's got 13 lending institutions in the last five or six houses. Nobody from town's bought them. It's where it's all connected. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm sorry about interrupting your answer there. That was the last answer to that question about cruise tourism. So the next question will go to Robert first. This is about schools. This is a listener question submitted by Beth. She says, multi-year cuts to the state education budget are hurting Sitka schools. As just one example, none of the schools in our district had functioning libraries at the start of the school year. So it's a two-part question. First, do you support funding schools to the cap at the city level? And second, if elected to the assembly, how would you further support our school district in the face of more state-level budget cuts in the years to come? And you have 2 minutes.
I think that, first of all, I reach out to the school teachers, the administrators, and the ancillary staff functioning in the budgetary environment they have functioned under in the last couple years. It's almost like they've had to function with one hand tied behind their back. We are very blessed that we have high-quality educators in this town, and kids can get a good education for the most part. Unfortunately, we have a budgetary process that comes out of the governor's office and out of the legislative that it just doesn't make sense anymore. To run a business that you don't know the end of June how much money you have to open up the business in August every year, it doesn't make sense. We need to band together with other communities in Alaska and in Southeast Alaska, work with our state representatives, and come up with a budgetary process. I think we currently are having two good people have come off of the board because they just the budgetary nightmare. I applaud the creative ways that the assembly has found ways to go even a little bit beyond the cap. Which funding Blatchley Schools, the Performing Arts Center, those are all things enjoyed by the community. I've gained a little more information, but I'm a little concerned that hopefully there's some more money for school repairs. But the city has taken on the responsibility for the maintenance. I did learn that the city owns all the school buildings, I agree with some in the community and that I think there's room for more homeschooling, which I think we have an excellent program now that's sharing. And I also think there's room for charter schools, but not up against us having quality public schools. And I totally support that.
Thank you. Austin, you're next.
Of course. To answer the first part of that question, I do support funding to the cap. As previously mentioned, I work for the university. We're constantly having to deal with the same budget process that our public schools have to deal with. In fact, that's part of the reason I joined the University of Alaska System Governance. I'm currently vice president of UAS Staff Council, and I'm nominated, likely to be confirmed, chairman of the Staff Alliance, which is the statewide advisory board to the Board of Regents, and President Pat Pitney. So I have personally a lot of experience of having to deal with the state office regarding the budget, especially for our campus here. and Sitka. But yeah, I do support funding to the cap as what the city can do. As Robert mentioned, Southeast in general and the state as a whole do need to put their foot down, both to the governor and to their representatives, because I would like to remind the public that a veto, or the governor vetoed the bill that would have funded our schools, and we could have the legislator could have overturned the veto if they had one more vote. It was the people that we voted into office that allowed the governor to do what he got away with doing. So this is why your local elections are very important. So we need to make sure we're in contact with our representatives, with our senators, and like, hey, the governor shouldn't be allowed to just destroy schools, because the state, the nation, and even the city has a duty to the citizens to make sure that education is provided to our to the younger generation. Thank you.
Thank you. Scott?
Yes, I support funding to the cap. And I also see, this would be like the perfect topic to, in the subject of redirecting the passenger vessel funds, that the Love Boats could say, hey, our tax is now funding the library shortage due to budgetary cuts. And so that'll help Sullivan and Lisa get those weasel words out of there, so town can use that $50 a head for town stuff instead of the way they got it worded right now. Thank you.
Thank you. Kevin, this goes to you next.
Hi, thank you. I definitely support funding schools to the cap. Schools, the children are our future. I've always said that over and over again. If we are not as a society or supporting our children, then that's just not really a real shame. And Sitka has done a great job of supporting our schools and our children. And I just think that is one of the most important things in this community. So the part of this is that the base student allocation hasn't been increased. A permanent base student allocation hasn't been increased by the state since 2016. And on top of that, we've had huge inflation. And so that means the schools are being asked to do more with less. And so we need to support to the cap. Recently, the city took over the maintenance of the school. I believe that's about $600,000 a year. Anything we can do to find a way to support our schools and our children is absolutely fundamental. I've been a very strong supporter of schools these past 6 years. I was sponsored several ballots, measures that passed to help the schools in one way or another. And I'm grateful that the community voted yes on those and shown a strong support. I do believe if we can find other ways, that's great to support. I believe that we also need to be lobbying as a state, we need to be coming together and expressing to our legislators just how important schools are. This just cannot be okay anymore. We have to make sure the state knows how important it is. If the state had been keeping up with inflation this whole time, I think I saw a presentation by the school board a couple months ago, then they would be, we wouldn't need to fund as much as we are, but it's an honor to do so. Absolutely, and I'll continue to do that the entire time.
Thank you very much. And that concludes the answers to the question about education from Beth. So our next question is going to go to Austin first. And this is another listener question from Janet. Janet asks, do you believe the mayor and assembly positions should be limited to 2 terms? If so, why? And if not, why not?
That's definitely a difficult question to answer. Obviously, on a national level, our executive, the President of the United States, is limited by 2 terms. But that was more of something that came later. It was not something that started off with the founding of the nation. There were actually a couple presidents that served longer than 2 terms and did very well for the nation. FDR is one such president. I believe he ended up serving 3 terms total before the cap was put in place where you could only serve 2 terms. It really comes down to who is in office. And in a perfect world, we wouldn't have to have term limits because we would have qualified candidates. We would elect the most qualified candidate and we'd all sing Kumbaya and be done with it. In our world, however, which is not perfect, I could see an argument for having term limits. It allows newer blood to get into assembly positions, mayor positions, and it restricts this kind of, well, this is how we've always done it type thinking. So if that's something that the citizens supported, I would definitely support it. I know there's been talk by a lot of different groups, both tourism, government, education, about doing petitions to change the Home Rule Charter, which we're allowed to do under the Home Rule Charter. And yeah, if a petition came forward saying we want two-term limits for assembly and mayor, I would support it. Thank you.
Thank you. Scott, this question goes to you next.
I remember Mayor John had four terms. Pretty good story about how he lost that fourth term in town here. But with that Open Meetings Act, I don't think you can get that Tammany Hall thing going quite as good as, you know, four or five consecutive times as mayor. I don't know. I'd have to think about it more, as long as you're getting the job done, you know. You can trust a dictator, but not a democracy. I don't know. I'll have to think about that. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. This goes to Kevin Mosher next.
Hi. Thank you. My answer on that would be no. When I first got on the assembly, I kind of would have considered that, and I actually talked to people about that, and some experienced people in town brought it to light that it's one of those things that sounds good on paper, but the reality net effect is going to be that if you only have limited terms, by the time you have experience and real confidence to do the job, then you're out and starts all over again. And so that creates a basically experience or power vacuum, so to speak. So what happens is the staff ends up running the things, making the real decisions, and maybe not at the meetings, but they can direct things or push things in a certain way just out of bare necessity, not because of any foul thing. So the net effect of that, in my opinion, would be that you would be, the city would basically be run by unelected officials, so to speak, with the elected officials just being there as a facade, so to speak. And for me, it took me about 3 years before I was really comfortable. I'm still learning every day. I feel like that's a lot of what I bring right now, is several years of experience and growth, and I'd like to continue that for this community. Finally, in the past, the SITCA has had many people who've served on for quite a long time, and they have brought about, they were actually very effective in what they did, and I think it would be not necessarily the best thing. Like I said, I think it would sound great on paper, but the reality net effect I don't think would be helpful for the community.
Thank you, Kevin. Robert?
Thank you, Kevin, and the others. I think I'm going to have to agree with you that, I agree with Austin that probably at the federal and the national level, we need to really visit this issue about term limits. We have a political system that ends up serving itself and not serving. But I think we're very fortunate that really the strength of our democracy is what we do at home and at the local level. And we do have a way of limiting terms, which is voting somebody out, bringing up strong candidates to replace them. And I'm not sure that having a system that says every so many years we need to totally wipe the slate clean. There is such a thing as corporate knowledge or bringing knowledge forward. Kevin has served on the assembly for a while. Of course, if there was a strong opinion in the community, went to the ballot, I would support it because that's the will of the people and that's the democracy. But I don't think at the local level we need to really entertain term limits.
Thank you. All right, this next question will go to Scott first. And this is a listener question from Nancy. Nancy asks, may we please have an ordinance banning idling? Why do we have to put up with unnecessary air pollution? So I think the question is, would you support an ordinance banning idling? Why or why not?
Only if she's going to enforce the death penalty for it, you know. No, not really. It's impossible, you know, and I have people come up to me before, just what the mayor was talking about. You're trying to get your windows, you know, defrosted. You run into Lakeside, you're idling, and then somebody's ragging on you. We all know, and no, I would not support that any more than supporting a jaywalking ordinance and start writing up the Love Boat people when they bust across the street. Thank you.
Thank you. This goes to Kevin next.
Hi, thank you. That's a very good question. I agree with Scott. I would not support that. For basically the thing that he pointed out is enforcement would be very, very difficult, almost impossible. We have a lot of, the police department has a lot of things to do, and the staff has a lot of things to do. We just wouldn't have the time, and it would be very difficult to enforce at all. And then you'd have a system where people are basically, you know, I don't know how to say it, but like snitching on each other and, you know, sharing it on Facebook and saying, you know, all these things and barraging the police department with all these things. I think that would bring, it just wouldn't be worth the trouble. And I think the end of the day, people would not be happy with it. And I would believe that if we had done that, if we did it, it would eventually be overturned anyways for those reasons. Thank you.
Thank you. This goes to Robert next.
You know, I really am hesitant when we start talking about legislating other people to do something or stop doing something you don't like. I recently had the experience with the internet down. I was sitting in front of the city hall, had a gentleman pull up in front of me who also was streaming like all of us out of city hall, and he had his truck running. And I went over and the fumes were just coming right at my face as I'm sitting there at the bench. And I went over and knocked on his window and pointed, could he turn it off? And he turned it off. And next thing I know, he's getting out of his car. And I'm like, oh, no. And he came over and he apologized. And he said, I wasn't thinking. You guys are sitting there. Of course my exhaust is going. Thanks for telling me. I think that's the approach that we need to take, is we need to educate our community that idling cars is a hazard, and sometimes it's downright impolite, but it's something that we can deal with as a community. And when we just decide that, we'll legislate everything we don't like or against it for it, then we stop being a community. And that's what I support, is that we educate and just be sensible.
Thank you. Austin, this goes to you next.
Yeah, that's a complicated question. As Scott mentioned, are we going to start fining people because their car is running in their yard in the middle of December when there's 3 feet of snow outside in 23-degree weather? I could see maybe a case for some of the heavier-duty vehicles, like if the tour buses, for example, are in front of Centennial Hall and they're sitting there idling for 10, 15 minutes. Okay. You know, assuming they're allowed, those buses are set up to where they can be turned off and on and don't have, you know, lengthy other issues. Something like that, yeah, I could see, you know. And do we need to legislate that? No, that might be something where we can, you know, talk to the tourism companies, talk to the dock and be like, hey, if y'all are going to be sitting for an extended period of time, turn it off. I know we have no idling zones. I believe the daycares have no idling zones. The schools, I believe, have no idling zones. So certain areas should definitely areas that we shouldn't be idling if we don't absolutely have to be idling, we shouldn't be idling in them. But legislating it to where it's like, no, we're going to start fining people if they're idling, that seems like a slippery slope that we don't want to go down. Thank you.
Thank you. And this goes, I think we've all answered this question, so move on to another. And this one is from Toby. This is about Sitka's waste stream and garbage. And the question is, what can we do to reduce the amount of compostable materials that are shipped south? And this will go to Kevin first.
Okay. All right. I see the benefit now. If you're not the first one, you can have more time to think. But, solid waste is a problem. It's an issue, not just financially, but environmentally. I'm the liaison to the Sustainability Commission. I helped, sponsored to get the creation of the Sustainability Task Force and then Commission, and they are one of their main tasks so far from the Assembly. There's a couple, but is to help come up with solutions to help manage the waste stream, that very thing. And so that's in progress. But we need to be, you know, we don't have it solved, but we need to be doing more, more recycling and encouraging composting, anything we can do to reduce any waste to the environment, because that's very important. We need to be looking for solutions. That's it.
Thank you. This goes to Robert next.
Yeah, I agree that our waste stream issue, the fact that it costs us so much money to get the waste that we have, and I think the sustainability has initiated some processes to look at it. One is we need to have an active composting system. We need soil, and we can develop soil with composting. It's going to take a change in behavior. But we can create that out of composting. And the science of composting is advanced. Almost all the stockyards now compost dead animals. So that's just one part of it. I also lived in the state of New Mexico, where they realized that in their rural areas that it wasn't cost effective to move glass and plastic around in small amounts. They created dedicated landfill where they would amass glass over several years, and then it would be worthwhile to ship it out instead of just moving one small truckload a week. I think there's many ways that we can look at that. There's many other communities that are looking at it. The fact it's the wave of the future, and as we look at the high cost of living, and being here in Sitka, managing our waste stream is going to be very, very important. And I look forward to working on that.
Thank you. Austin?
Yeah, this is something that should be pretty easy to solve. The city can work with non-government organizations, other community organizations. I know there's several companies that donate, for example, their food waste to Fortress of the Bear. We're recently having the community garden that's becoming a thing. We can donate food waste and other composts to the community garden so that they can use it within the community garden. An incinerator has been something that has been brought up, and it's been back and forth about, okay, well, then what about the environmental impact of an incinerator? But carbon capture technology has become something that is getting more and more advanced, and you can incinerate material, capture that carbon, and then you can end up selling that carbon for other uses. So not only are you getting rid of the waste and capturing the carbon, but then you're also generating some form of income by selling the carbon to whoever needs it for whatever scientific purpose that they're using it for. So there's definitely a lot of stuff that we can do. Obviously, we should look at improving efficiency for glass recycling. I know there's a couple people in town that have like miniature kilns to melt the glass for their art projects. We should be looking at all the avenues to reduce that, because it's expensive to get stuff on and off the island. So, yeah, if we're spending thousands and thousands of dollars to get stuff off the island, that is not sustainable. Thank you.
Thank you. Scott?
I agree with everything everybody said. I got a huge food waste in the article, or the NPR had a good thing just day before yesterday or something on composting, and without it, what the huge percentage is contributing to the climate change issue. And, you know, it was suggested that when the mill closed, that Sitka became the recycling center of Southeast and start rat holing different minerals and could just, anyway, yeah, I'm for it. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, this next question is going to go to Robert first, and this is about child care, an issue important to lots of Sitkans. How can the Assembly help alleviate Sitka's child care shortage? Would you support a local child care subsidy, for example?
You know, the city of Sitka is not in the business of doing child care, and we do have various entities from the tribe to community and for-profit organizations that are doing child care. But as we well know, those who have young children, we don't have enough. I think that this is where, again, we're going to take a lot of creativity to figure out how can we support child care. You can subsidize the cost of child care, but if you don't have enough facilities, that doesn't create more child care. And so what can we do to look at our laws to make it easier to set up child cares? Can we support home-based child care and more aggressively? I think that one thing that we need to look at is that Search is coming on with a brand new facility. They're the largest employer. Are they providing any child care for their employees? Multi-prong, definitely a need, especially if you have young children. But I don't think that the city needs to get in the business of providing child care.
Thank you. Austin?
Of course, yeah. I agree with Robert on several things. Some history. When I was young, my mother actually did at-home child care. She took care of myself, my two younger siblings, and seven other kids because the state law and the local law at the time allowed her to take care of 10 children within the home. So that's something we should definitely look at, the state law and the city code of, like, is that something we can support? And then we should attempt to support organizations. I know there was talk recently about preschool and setting something like that up. We can make it easier for these organizations to do their job. Because I hear a lot of the main issues that come from the for-profit child care is that, well, we don't have enough employees. Well, the employee issue is obviously a housing issue and all that other stuff. So we should be amending and removing laws that are putting up barriers that don't need to be there. Obviously, some barriers are there for health and safety and all that other fun stuff, but the barriers that are doing undue hardship should be removed, and we should be encouraging these nonprofits, these for-profits, and these other organizations so that they can do child care. Thank you.
Thanks. Scott?
Yeah, Rebecca Hemshoot kind of summed it up, where the education payments to get their curriculum, to get the certificate or the entry permit, the wages don't match what it just took for you to get that certificate. And so, you know, just to make it work, yeah, I'm all for taking cruise love boat people, the $50 head tax, and then throwing it in at the community because we need something now, and using that money, and then the love boats can say, hey, we're helping with childcare in addition to getting the library staff to help, you know, to redirect that money. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Kevin?
Thank you. Yeah, this is a very challenging one. I do believe child care is absolutely critical in this community. It's right up there with housing. With that CETA report, when they did a survey of business owners, a lot of them said that the most important things for them was child care and housing. And so those things go hand in hand. As far as a subsidy, you know, I would love to do that. I would just love to have enough money to do that, maybe subsidize the centers or subsidize the wages. But we don't have the resources for that right now. But I do believe we should be looking at creative ways. Pretty much everything everyone here said I think is a good idea. We need to be looking at creative ways to try to help encourage the workers, to give them to make it, encourage more of a field, that is more of a field. Cities can bring stakeholders together and sponsor things to help people come up with creative ideas. But as of right now, I could not support a subsidy only because we can't afford it, and it would be a lot of money. I think there was a conference or something a year or so ago, and a lady from Juneau came, and she was saying it was going to cost $500,000 a year to do it, to make an effective change. And we don't have the money for that right now, but I do think we need to help contribute anything we can to help increase child care in this town, including another idea, yeah, is to, if anything we can do with the rules to help encourage, you know, maybe home care centers and things like that. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. This question will go to Austin first, and it's another question from our election questionnaire. I just want to give listeners a chance to hear your answers to some of these questions, especially since lots of folks have been offline for the last couple of weeks. And I want to make sure also people know how much work you put into the questionnaires that are on our website now. And we've asked about a lot of the questions there that we haven't touched on tonight. But this one is about housing. Do you see a need for further regulatory measures to ease Sitka's housing crisis? What tangible actions can the Assembly take to relieve some of Sitka's housing stress? And you have 2 minutes.
Of course. The issue with housing is that there's not enough land. We need to encourage proper development of the land we have and redevelopment of land that could house, say, apartment complexes or what have you. I've heard the rumor that the reason we don't have apartment complexes is that buildings can only be so high, but I haven't been able to find a city ordinance that says they're only allowed to be so high, and Cathedral Arms is pretty high of a building already, so it's like, why can we not build apartment complexes? Why can't we redevelop these lots, obviously with, you know, owner's permission? We're not going to just go knock people's buildings down to have higher density housing, because that's the issue, is we're going to have to build up, not out. Obviously, there's been talks about reopening Kramer Avenue, which we probably could, as long as we do the proper due diligence this time. There should have been retaining walls. There should have been anchors to prevent a slide. I know there's several private citizens that are trying to develop land. There's several nonprofits in the city of Sitka that are trying to redevelop land. The city should be encouraging those organizations to continue. There's been some talk about limiting short-term rentals. I think it depends on how that limiting works. Some people that do short-term rentals do it as in-law suites, and they use that money to basically pay their mortgage, and they wouldn't be able to afford to live in Sitka if those in-law suites didn't exist. So we need to be careful about what we do with that. And then the report that came out, the state of Sitka's economy, stated that we're pretty flatline on new short-term rentals as well. So hopefully this will not become a major issue and we can continue to build housing. Thank you.
Thank you. Scott?
Well, it's through the home rule aspect. And we can change, you know, every little, you go to the planning department, you got to get a variance, you got to do this. Wide sweeping vote, yes or no, the city could vote in and get rid of minimum lot sizes, all kinds of stuff that could be focused. And like the best place to observe this happening is in the state of Minnesota. It started as called the missing middle legislation, and it failed on not in my backyard, and now they're coming back around and it's calling it yes in my backyard. And that is an avant-garde, you know, the people are making it happen because the regular system just isn't happening, and the regular system just perpetuates rising housing costs and too big of houses and just what we've got going on here ever since they kicked us out of our float houses here 45 years ago. You know, it's just the way the city is designed to facilitate the most expensive housing that the lending institutions can make, or, you know, that the money that they can sell, and then it's just a repetitive thing. It's the same everywhere, but not, because in a town that changes through home rule, you can make it so that you can make it affordable and build a Wanigan on your house because your kids got kicked out of school or whatever and have to come back home. And that's what the whole thing is yes, in my backyard, it's your property. You build what you need so your family's comfortable and safe. I'm good.
Thank you. Kevin?
Yeah, thanks. Thank you. Yeah, this is a hugely critical issue. And honestly, it breaks my heart that it is so difficult for people now. I honestly can say, I think if I was trying to buy my own house, I couldn't now. It's nothing exciting. It's just an older house. But I was able to get into it, thank goodness. But the prices have increased. And I think, the solution. So one of my biggest thoughts of a solution is the land study that's going on right now in Sitka. You know, there is some developable land, I believe, in Sitka, but we don't know how much and where. So we need to finish that study. It's getting ready to be done soon, and then I've talked to several people about this, and the thought is we could develop that into, basically a planned community development. I just don't want to develop land and then sell it off to high bidders so that some out of towners who don't live here and are wealthy enough can buy another expensive house that they don't live in. So, although it is people's right to do that, but I would like to help. You know, if we have a decent amount of land, we could develop some for designate some for high density condos, trailer parks, modular homes. Those are the kind of things we need to focus on. And the land trust model, I think the land trust, we could give some to the land trust. I think that's a really, all those things are really important, as well as regulatory things. Maybe smaller lot sizes if wanted, and those kind of things. Any idea like that? Anything other creative ideas we need to be doing to make sure that we can do this. And we can also look to other communities to see how some people are doing. In addition to the land, the land that we have is just that land. We need to be doing other things. I believe that the state and Sitka and the Forest Service were talking about swapping some land, that kind of thing. So hopefully we can do that. I'm running out of time. Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin. All right, we have time for just a couple more questions. This is another listener question from Lorraine, and I think this will go to Scott first. And this is... Oh, sorry.
You didn't answer the last question.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But let's go on. Let's get some different questions.
I think we want to hear your answer to the question, Robert. Okay. I'm so sorry.
That's all right.
I apologize.
Yes. In terms of what's affecting us, probably with the most lasting impact, maybe even more than tourism, is the fact that we don't have enough housing units, both rentals and houses. I think Scott's right on. We have a model that what's the maximal that we can loan. That model of having half an acre with a house in the middle of it is the most expensive way to do infrastructure. And the answer is density, density, density. We have a lot of structures downtown that have second and third floors above the retail that could be developed as housing units. That would help also enhance that our downtown becomes part of a living community and not a part of Walt Disney that we roll up every night, that people actually live downtown. And I think there are people that would enjoy that. A discussion that I've had, it seems to come along in cycles, is that we don't have a whole lot of land. It's going to take some creativity. We have a lot of harbor, a floating, living for liveaboards, and having space that actually has a real sewer system, has common space, has a city park that's floating. Those are conversations that we need to have. And it's going to work. Ironically, in the whole state of Alaska, housing is one of the primary issues. Sitka's building the most houses than any other town in the state. But I think they counted in what Search built. And so we've got a big problem. It's going to take us, a lot of us, working together. There is the, out of the Health Summit, there is the Housing Consortium, a lot of just groundbreaking stuff starting to happen. And I think we can look at how we prevent housing development and at the assembly level and loosening some of those. It's even beyond, yes, in my backyard. It's to the point of, yes, in our backyard and increasing the density.
Thank you. All right, this next question will go to Scott first, and it is from Lorraine, and she asks, strictly speaking about the building only, not anything else about the police department, how invested are you in pursuing funding and voting for construction of a new police department building? You have 2 minutes.
Wait, now, did you say she's talking about the building that's existing?
She wants a new building. She wants construction of a new building.
I want the third floor when the courts go over across from the Sage building and they make the courthouse there. Then the third story can become an avant-garde police station that improves morale and makes up for them guys putting up with what they've been putting up with. But, you know, the town voted down the new fire hall. Staff built it anyway. The town voted down the city shops. They built it anyway. So I fully expect they'll get to build whatever they want, even however good it sounds that move the judges over in by across from the Sage building and then redo, even like Robert Sand, build up on top of the existing cop shop. It's in a center location. People say that's unfeasible. They want to build from scratch. I don't know about that. I got to hear more. But I'm all in favor of supporting our cops. We got to pay them more, make it so that, you know, they got a better facility. But I'm not about building a new place with... Anyway, yeah, I'm good.
Okay. This will go to Kevin next.
Hi. Thank you. I'll say shout out to Lorraine. I've talked to her several times about this over the years. She's very passionate about this, and rightfully so. And I do agree. I just have to say it's important to support our police and law enforcement. I would like a brand new building. I would like or a complete rehab for the police department. But and I'm open to considering it. I'm open to looking into ideas about how to do that. My only concern is frankly, that there are a lot more other projects that are more urgent, because that would be a new facility. And we have a lot of things like roads, sewer systems failing, those kind of things that have to be the priority. But this is nothing about my opinion about the police in general. They're doing a great job, and I support them. Very grateful and thankful for them. It's just a brand new building. It would be a lot of money. But maybe we can apply for grants. Maybe we can, you know, use money for, I'm sorry, just, that was 1 minute?
30 seconds. 1 minute.
Okay. Maybe we can, grants is not going to pay for all of it, but anything we can do, maybe consider taking out some bonds. I don't know. I'd have to really think about that and you know, talk to other assembly members and talk to finance, see if that pencils out financially. Thank you.
Thank you.
I know working most of my professional career as a registered nurse in the emergency room, the importance of having the most updated facility that you can have increases the issues of efficiency, increases safety. Safety, I have interacted with our police department and the facility we have. It's woefully inadequate. The jail is not a safe place for us to keep people. And we do need a new building. Unfortunately, most of the municipal architecture, most city buildings that have been built since the Second World War, it's cheaper to tear them down than it is to rebuild them. But we all know that it's so expensive to build here, and that needs to seriously be updated. There's not enough room there in that building for the courts, for the fish and game and the other things. There's need for more room, and I would support that we look at grants, we look at state funding, maybe a bond, and as Scott touched on, that a current building that's up to code and is a professional building will also help morale. I think that who's leading our police department and the assembly members that want to address it is we need to look at every funding source we can find to upgrade the facilities that we have for our police department.
Thank you. Austin?
Yes, talking about just the building itself, I believe there was a study, and I agree with Robert, having been in the back of the police department myself.
We'll talk about that.
Yeah. Yeah. The cells are inadequate is what we'll call them. I know we commonly have to send people to Lemon Creek because they can't be held here. They have to go to Lemon Creek because we can only hold them for a certain amount of time. I know there's been incidences in those cells specifically, not going into all of that information, but yes, the building needs to be redone. Grants, state funding, federal funding, and as Robert said, it's a health and safety issue. I would argue if we're going to have 500,000, 750,000 visitors here in Sitka, we should have the police and the police department building capable of handling that. If something actually happens, we can't hold everybody currently. We have, I think it's 2 jail cells. So the building definitely needs to be redone. I lean more towards a demolition and a new build versus rehabilitation of the current building. Obviously, there's offices outside of the police department that are in there, the courthouse, fish and game, I believe, forget the name of the work office, but the unemployment office, basically. All of them are in there. And maybe we can get some buy-in from those departments. It's like, hey, do you want a new shiny building? Help put some funding towards it. But yeah, it's definitely something we need to look into just on the health and safety aspect. Thank you.
Thank you. And we're running out of time. I know there are many more issues we could touch on if we had more time, but we've got Bops from the Swamp coming up next, and I want to make sure we have some time for local music. So we just have one more question for you, and it'll go to Kevin first, and that is, why should Sitkins vote for you?
Thank you. I'm asking Sitkins to vote for me, to put their faith in me for another three-year term. I have tried to put my heart and soul in these past 6 years. I have made many mistakes, but I believe I've had some victories too. And as I said before, it's always as a member of a team, not as one person. It has been my highest honor to serve this city, and I have grown professionally and emotionally and learned so much about myself and other people. And it has just been just a huge blessing. I would like to continue encourage people to look at the answers to the Raven Radio questionnaire, because I was able to go in more detail on things. It's kind of hard to do it in 2 minutes, but there's a purpose in that too. But I would like to continue to provide 3 more years of steady leadership. I have a level head, and I like to listen to people, and I think I bring a good presence to the assembly table and to the public. And thank you. I'm all in, and I would like to serve another term, and if Sitka will have me. And that's another thing. The people of Sitka, we talk about the beauty and everything else like that, and it is beautiful here, but the people are what makes this town great. And it has been my absolute honor as well to meet so many new different people. And I'm just grateful for this experience, and I'd like to continue serving and giving my all to this community. Thank you.
I want to ask for the opportunity to serve at the city level. I have, over the last 14 years that I've been here in Sitka, have had the fortune to serve on the hospital board. I have had the fortune to serve on various committees and boards. And I think that I have the skill set. I used a moniker because it rhymes with my last name. I say Hattle for the battle. I don't have an axe to grind. I'm not upset with somebody or doesn't think somebody's not been doing their job. But I do think there's a lot of issues regarding the haul out, regarding housing, regarding the cruise ship industry impact. All of those are uphill battles that we need to come for. I have a loud voice. I would like to be your strong voice on the assembly. I listen to people. That's one of my, besides having wanting a strong voice, I'm only to get that if I can hear from you. And I invite people, whether I get elected to the assembly, I want to hear from you. I've enjoyed talking with people. I also get asked, why are you running for assembly besides these uphill battle issues? I have an overlying arch that I'm very dedicated. And where you are politically at the state level or nationally, I think we can all pretty much agree that our democracy right now is under distress. We're working those issues out, but I am a strong believer that true democracy and the way we're going to re-strengthen our democracy is at home at the local level. Not only do I encourage you to vote for me and to be your strong voice on the assembly, but I also encourage you, don't just go to City Hall to complain. We have many commissions, we have many committees. You can participate. It's us working shoulder to shoulder together as neighbors that's going to re-strengthen our democracy. And I think we do it well here in Sitka, and I'd like to be your representative to do that. Thank you.
Thank you, Robert. Austin?
Indeed. It's pretty simple. The reason I'm running is we have declining population. According to the report, the State of Sitka Economy, Alaska Native is also one of the largest groups that's leaving Sitka. People that were born and raised in Sitka should not have to leave Sitka because they can't afford to live here. We need to get housing under control. We need to get infrastructure under control. And we need to get tourism under control. Regarding infrastructure, we had a pump station that should have been replaced 5 years ago. It would have been still millions of dollars, but now it's millions of dollars more because we kept laying it off and we kept laying it off. And it's like, why didn't we replace it when it was $3 million cheaper than it is now? Why are we not maintaining our infrastructure so that we're not having to take out loans for millions and billions of dollars? As Scott mentioned, the dam needs to have maintenance done to it that is required by federal law, and it's not being done. All of this results in higher utility rates, higher housing cost, higher cost of living. It needs to be dealt with, and I understand that the current assembly works well together, but we're not seeing any changes. What are you working on? People are still leaving at a rapid rate. We have a population decline. It's in the numbers. The research doesn't lie. We have a rising cost of living. We have a rising rental prices. It needs to be handled, and it's not being handled. Do we give them another 10 years and then we'll rope back in 10 years and be like, oh, the problem still isn't fixed? Or do we put people into the position to get the problem fixed? Thank you.
Thank you. Scott?
Well, I guess I do have an axe to grind, is why you should vote for me. That if you drive down Caguantan Street and you try to walk down Catlian Street, look at the transformer across from LFS. There's just so much that's wrong with the village that I'd like to be able to show people that it's connected to the rest of Sitka. And, you know, I tried to get the sidewalk open before and the assembly shut me down. And there's an issue of not paying attention and just clouding over with our prosperity that's coming, supposedly. And then the village just keeps on being neglected. And, yeah, you know, I've lived there for a long time, but I see stuff that a lot of people don't see because they've not lived in the village, and they can't see the repetitive neglect that city government portrays along Catlian Street, but all the talk is about all our prosperity. Another reason is, the city's taken over Blatchley heat pumps and the Blatchley dehumidifier, every reach-in, every walk-in, all the heat pumps at Centennial Building. I'm trying to work with human resources to make sure that a refrigeration guy is in the tool belt of the city. Imagine if the city had to take all the vehicles to Foreign Auto or to Naum's, you know, but by being able to work on it in-house and by having a refrigeration tech in-house taking care of all these little things that we pay out the nose for, I believe it would save enough revenue so that seniors could swim for free at Blatchley. Just something that helps people with a fixed income. And, you know, right after the sidewalk, that's where I'm going, because that refrigeration ties in with electrical, and that's where the trades aspect is what I bring. My language, yeah, tough duty, sorry about that, but I'm here for the duration, and I'm here for my kids. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And thanks to all of the candidates who participated tonight in our assembly forum. Again, I wish we had more time to talk about all of the issues. But if you are just tuning in and you haven't had the chance to look at the election center on KCAW's website, all of the candidates for mayor and assembly and school board have completed very detailed questionnaires. You can find their answers there. Then tomorrow I'll post the audio from this forum there as well. I just want to thank all of the candidates who participated. Thanks to the listeners who called in to submit questions. Thank you so much to Rob for answering the phone and taking some of those questions. And you have been listening to our Assembly Candidate Forum on Raven Radio, KCAW Sitka. Up next is Bops from the Swamp.